anybody who has paid attention to these podcasts over the years, or any of my broadcasts for that matter, knows that I am a full-fledged bring back the Royals guy in the Ontario Hockey League. So it goes without saying, any chance I can get a former Cornwall Royal on this podcast, I'm going to do it. And it just so happens he's a local boy too, to the region of Waterloo. Eric Calder makes time. It's great to have you here. Thanks so much for joining me.
It's a pleasure. I look forward to talking some hockey, and sure, I love the Cornwall Royals. Got good memories.
I love to hear that, and I can't wait to dive into them. That's actually where I wanted to start. As a kid from Kitchener, how do you end up with the Royals when they were a Quebec team still in 81?
You know, that was a big kind of a surprise to me at the time. So played for the Siskins and as a 16-year-old, and I was on the OHL Central scouting list. I was up process. I mean, I was forecasted to be a high pick, and I went second pick overall to Cornwall. I went down to the OHL draft, which was in Mississauga. I got picked, and I didn't know where Cornwall was at the time as a 16-year-old. The best thing that came about it was my best friend, Roy Russell, who I played with all the way up from the time I was 7 years old, and we played for the Siskins together. He got drafted in the fourth round, so that we both went to Cornwall together, and we ended up being roommates, sharing the same room for the first 2 years.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And you're going, though, Eric, so you're a rookie in the league, and you're going to the defending Memorial Cup champions. What was that like?
You know, that was exciting. And right away I get exposed to the Memorial Cup and its importance and vying for the Canadian championship. And then I'm amongst, you know, some really top player, quality players. You know, we had Dale Hawerchuk and we had Mark Crawford, who had won, and Scott O'Neill. My defense partner that year was Fred Arthur. He was a first round pick to the Hartford Whalers, and kind of goes on. And then myself, Roy Russell, and Doug Gilmore, the three of us, we were all drafted to the Cornwall Royals together. So it was exciting. I was the second pick. Dougie was the third, and Roy was the fourth. And we had a first pick by the name of Jeff Etoff, and he played really well that year too. The four of us were all important parts of the Memorial Cup team that won the 82 Cup.
Was there a sense through that season, Eric, that the mission was to repeat as champions?
At the start, for sure, there was expectations because we had Dale back. And I did make a mistake. It was the 81 Memorial Cup that I won, not the 82. So we won in 80-81. But we had a good core group of players that came back. And, so the expectations were there. And fortunately, we did finish first overall in the league that year. We kind of had a little bit of a slow start, I remember. And then we came on and played really well. And then, you know, we didn't cruise through the playoffs. We had a tough first series against the Quebec Ramparts and Sherbrooke. We went seven games, but then in the finals, we kind of got our rhythm and we beat Three Rivers, who was the next team, I think, that finished second in the league. Maybe Sherbrooke did, but they had a good team and we beat them in five games before going to the Memorial Cup.
What was travel like as a Cornwall Royal, Ontario-based team geographically, but in the Quebec League? What was that like for you?
You know, that was definitely added excitement because every place we went to, we had a lot of fans that came to the game, not Cornwall fans, but they wanted to come and cheer for the Quebec team against the Ontario team. And they're boisterous, the Quebec fans. So, you know, it was really exciting going into a new province. I really hadn't had much experience in Quebec and seeing it. You know, my French was very limited from school at that time, but didn't really need it because our coaches were, all English speaking, and we were based in Ontario. I did actually live with a bilingual family. It was an elderly couple, and they were predominantly French, but they spoke English really well. So it worked out really well for Roy and I. But I wish I am pretty much bilingual now because I went and played hockey in Europe for 9 years, and seven of them were in France. So I picked up French. I really wish I would have had the French I have now when I was 17, 18, and 19 in Cornwall.
Well, yeah, it might have helped in some ways, but in other ways, maybe it's a good thing you didn't fully understand what those Quebec fans were yelling at you at that Ontario-based team.
Yeah, I think you're right. They were very animated. A lot of times they'd come to around the penalty box and they were hammering on the glass. And but we didn't really have any trouble or any problems. It was all good fun, and it was a great year. I mean, the
Well,
biggest thing about that year too, I don't remember, but Canada always took the Memorial Cup champion for the World Junior Championships. So not only did I get to play in the Memorial Cup that year and win it, but I went to the World Junior Championships with Cornwall, and we picked up seven players from the Quebec League, and that was in Germany that particular year. And I got really good memories of going and doing that. I don't know, it's kind of, as a 17-year-old, I was really lucky. I played really good. I had a great 17-year-old year, and I was actually selected as one of the Canadian MVPs in that tournament for Canada as a 17-year-old. So I'm proud of that.
it must have felt like a whirlwind, Eric. You mentioned you go to the OHL draft in Mississauga. You end up being drafted to a Quebec League team, even though it's based in Ontario, but you don't even know where Cornwall is. Then you're traveling all through Quebec with the team, playing those other Quebec teams. Plus, you're off to Germany and you're going to the Memorial Cup. I know it was in Windsor again in Ontario that year, but still, as a 17-year-old, your rookie tour through major junior hockey was one hell of a tour with all you saw.
It was a great experience, and no question. I never anticipated the year that followed, being drafted in the OHL draft as a 16-year-old from Cornwall, and where we went, and then, it actually ending up with being drafted by Washington that year as a high pick and as a 45th pick overall in the NHL draft. So it was a really, really memorable, exciting year, I tell you, to kick off my CHL career.
That World Junior team that you were a part of, as you said, they took the Memorial Cup champion. So by virtue of being drafted to Cornwall, off you go with all those talented players, Dale Hawerchuk, et cetera. You get named one of the Canadian MVPs. It strikes me though, Eric, that was back in a time, this is 81, before Canada's dominance at the tournament, right? Sweden was the gold medal winner that year.
They
How did
were.
it feel stacking up against those other world teams?
Well, we didn't do as well as we were supposed to. We lost a pivotal game against the Germans. It was in Germany. Can't really remember how the refereeing was, et cetera, and stuff. It was a really close game, but we had to win that game to advance to one of the rounds, because we did lose to the Americans. The Americans had a selected team that they picked from all across the US. But we still had a really good team. It was a disappointment that we didn't advance and move on. But, I got to get exposed to the national team the following year. It's my biggest deception in hockey, really. But I did go. We had a national team camp in Kingston the following year because we didn't do as well. So they decided to go to the national junior team the following year. So we had a selection camp in Kingston. I went to it. I was selected from it to play, but then they did have a Christmas camp, prior leading up to it. And at that time, they didn't take that many players. We only had seven defensemen that at camp, and then the number of forwards and maybe a couple extra forwards, and we had three goalies. So it in it all retrospect, interestingly enough, I don't know if you know, but both Alan McInnes and I, Kitchener Ranger, we were both released in the last cut. And it was kind of controversial because the GM of the team what one of the GMs was, the Regina Pat, I forget his name, but he was the GM for them. And he had a defenseman on Regina that wasn't at the selection camp for the Christmas camp. So he didn't even come in and do it, but he made the team. He ended up making the team. I got cut. Alan MacInnis got cut, who scored the most goals in the OHL that year for playing junior. And then, but they went on to win. You can't really argue with it because the team went on to win the gold medal. So there you go. But it still sits in my memory as a big deception for sure.
Well, and I guess it speaks to politics having been a part of this game since forever ago, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, and I was really upset, really, in the meeting because not upset. I didn't like visit for physically get upset. I was really quite calm about it. But after the fact, I never told the coaches that I won the most valuable player of the year before. So they didn't really have that. I was modest and naive to the whole situation. I don't know how that would have impacted the decision. Probably would have. It would have given them something to think about more. That's for sure.
You mentioned Al MacInnis, Kitchener Ranger, of course. And when you won that Memorial Cup in 81 with the Cornwall Royals, it's the Kitchener Rangers you played in the final. Whooped them pretty good, too. But how weird was it for you, Eric, playing against your hometown team for the national championship?
You know, that was added excitement for sure for both Roy and I. And you know, sure, you grow up going to Kitchener Ranger games and knowing about the Kitchener Rangers. And you know, obviously as a kid, you kind of think, oh, it'd be nice to play for the Kitchener Rangers, but and then ended up playing them in the Memorial Cup final. I mean, once you get playing hockey, you kind of just forget all that. You wanna win. So but it was exciting having a little bit of the extra media coverage, you know, Roy and I both being locals, and some of the excitement that I got to see in the local paper. That was kind of the biggest way things were advertised or promoted back then, was the newspaper. And I can remember being in a photo with the Memorial Cup, and it was Brian Bellows and I mucking it up in front of the net. And it was a picture on the, I think it was on the front page of the Record. So that made me pretty excited. And if I remember, it was one of those pictures that went across Canada. You know how they do select pictures and it gets in the CP line or whatever it is. So it was all across Canada. So that was exciting.
Did it change much the following year for you as a player when the team moved out of the Quebec League and Cornwall became an Ontario Hockey League team?
Yeah, well, you know, I was excited. I mean, it was interesting and fun playing in the Quebec League, but you know, all your family's in Ontario, and so it was nice and made it easier for my parents and friends to be able to come and watch and see games. And then I got back, you know, home a little bit more. You know, when you're in Cornwall, it's 6 hours away, so you really didn't get much of a chance to come home. The only time I came home, I think twice that year, maybe three. Well, I mean, during the hockey season, I came back after the championship on May 24th weekend. I can remember that, but I stayed in school. You had to stay in school, so I was down there for the whole year. It was as exciting as it was. You still had a little bit of homesickness for sure. Yeah, for sure.
Looking back on it and knowing the market, because I know you've returned since with your Skills Plus Hockey Academy,
Yeah.
could Cornwall support a team? Do you think we could bring them back into the league sometime?
You know, if I look back at it, it's disappointing that there isn't an OHL team or a CHL team there now. And it would be nice to be able to go back. Like I was out west skiing, but I saw, and I didn't know about the Memorial Cup team coming, the 82 champions coming back to the Ranger game. I would have loved to have gone to that game just. Maybe, and I know Brad Sparks really well. I probably would have got down to be able to see the cup. But you know, and so having that opportunity to kind of go back to Cornwall and see the Royals play and be a part of that history. They've got a good history. It's disappointing there's not a team there. I think that yeah, well, I mean we had really good support there. When I was there, it diminished, I guess, after I left a bit, so that they had to kind of financially make a decision to move on. But they're loyal fans. You know, they were loyal fans. I think that it could sustain itself, another team there. It'd be nice to have that history back.
CHL hockey, major junior back in the early 1980s, was a different beast than it is today. That's for sure. As a defenseman in the league at that time, how tough was the position to play?
Well, you know, I mean, defense is, I mean, any position in hockey is tough, but defense does require unique skills. And defense, I think, was required to be a little bit tougher back in the day. I mean, we had to, there was a real physical elements to it, and there was more, I don't know. I mean, I've watched games now, but I haven't watched extensively, but I really believe there's a lot less fighting now that went on back then, and there was tended to be a little bit more toughness that way. So it made it for a challenge for players. I don't really promote. I was never a real, I mean, I had to muck it up a little bit and stuff like that, but I was more of a tended to be more of a skill player, and didn't have to like get into too many fisticuffs, but I did have a couple. I did have a couple at times, and I was fortunate. I never really got beat up, which was good. So that's good.
Did
Looking
you
back on it.
for sure? I want Did you ever find yourself in one of those situations unexpectedly? But you know, it's pre-game, it's a line brawl, it's a bench clearing brawl, because those things happened back in the 80s.
You know, the Quebec League, yeah, you know, there was still a lot of toughness in the Quebec League, but in all honesty, I never in the OHL or the Quebec League, I can never remember having a full being involved in a full ice brawl where all the players were battling it out. So I can't really comment too much on that. I do remember seeing some, you know, but they were limited a little bit, but I think my biggest obstacle I had was I did get into a confrontation with Marty McSorley in junior once. And
What were you thinking, Eric?
at the time, it went all right, but it didn't go great. I kind of hurt my shoulder on it, but I didn't get beat up in it, which was really fortunate. But I would have, you know, based on how he's gone on with his career and the toughness, I didn't really realize how tough he was at the time. So you just get involved, it happens, and away you go.
Yeah, then you left that confrontation knowing how tough he was and decided you'd probably stay away from that side of the ice or something.
Yeah, I don't think I probably would have tried to push another fight with him, that's for sure.
You mentioned the
I've got to
Washington.
know him a little bit over
Have you?
the, because not really, but I know his family really well, because his family all went to, his brothers all went to Laurier, so I know a few of his brothers really quite well, and I've met Marty a couple times.
You mentioned the Washington Capitals, who drafted you in the third round, 45th overall to the National Hockey League. That's something they can never take away from you.
No, that's for sure. And you know, I look back, I was really unfortunate as a young player. I as a 17 and 18 year old, I played really well. And then as a 19 year old, I still played well in the league, but I had an injury in my last year, and I still have to deal with it. And I didn't really realize how prominent it was on really limiting my ability to play at the NHL, but I had my left ligament shortened because my shoulder started popping out. And the surgery at that time was to take the ligament and shorten it and put a staple in. So that what that's done though is it's limited my rotation. So I've lost about 20% of a rotation in my left shoulder. And because of that limitation, it actually impacted my ability to develop it and get strong. But more importantly, it limited my mechanics for shooting and passing and just all that those important skills. So little did I know, really having that operation at that time as a 19-year-old before I went and played in the American League probably was the end of my ability and my chance to play in the NHL, because I had to struggle with the strength of it throughout that whole year in the American League. And then even now to this day, I still don't have the strength. I don't have the mechanics. And being a professional skills instructor, I've really gone in and learned about all the mechanics. I learned video analysis. I can do video analysis like on players and break down their technique and how they shoot and their strengths and their weaknesses and what they should be working on to improve. And so I've really been able to see the limitations that it created with my own ability. So I'm sad about that because I was really given a good opportunity. Like, as I was called up as an 18-year-old to play with Washington, I went and finished the season there, and I was there for their last 10 games. After the Cornwall, we didn't make the playoffs that second year because we lost Howardchuk, we lost Boimstruck, and we lost Arneil. Good thing for the Kitchener Rangers, though. I really believe if we would have had those three players, like Dale Hawerchuk, Rookie of the Year, scored 105 points in the NHL. If we had him on our team, I don't think he would have been it. We would have anyone really would have been able to stop him very much. And we still would have had Arneil, and we had Doug Gilmore, who was coming out of it. We would have been a real challenge, I'll tell you, for those Kitchener Rangers that year that won the Memorial Cup. I got called up again in as a 19-year-old, and I went and played with Washington. But then I had my injury kind of, and I had to go down and have that surgery at the end of the year, and it just changed my trajectory, sadly enough.
Sounds like you were saying, though, if those players had stuck around, there would have been a chance for a three-peat with Cornwall.
I really believe there would have been, definitely would have been a really good chance, because we likely would have tried to pick up another couple players, and we did have a good core still with Jeff Etoff, myself, Roy Russell, and Doug Gilmore. And like I said, if you as soon as you take away players that three players that are playing in the NHL, Scott Arneil, Fred Boimstruck, who's a defenseman, and Dale Hawerchuk, you saw how good he was as a rookie in the NHL. Would have been, and the other player that we didn't get, I think if we would have had that player, who the other player that would have come to Cornwall, and he decided to, he we had drafted him, I believe, and we had him, but he decided to go and play in the Quebec League instead of Ontario, was Pat LaFontaine. So I think we probably would have, if those guys would have kind of stuck around or would have worked out or whatever, we probably would have had Pat LaFontaine, who would have played on that team as well.
That's an
So.
incredible list of names you're just reeling off.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
Did you have any other choice on the shoulder surgery at the time, Eric? Looking back, were there options? Or just if you knew then what you know now, would you have maybe not opted for
At
surgery?
that time, that was the best option, other than not having it. I think that in essence, I probably would have tried not having it, but I don't know how that would have worked either, because if I had the wrong type of contact, it would pop out, and then it would pop back in, but it would be like a couple days and it would start feeling normal. But now they do have a better technique that doesn't lose the rotation and the, I believe, the strength. I mean, if you don't lose the rotation, you're going to be able to build your strength, I believe, correctly. But they attach it lower now, or they attach it in a different spot now, where that you still get the same body functioning, and then they somehow prevent the shoulder from popping out in a different way than making the ligament shorter and putting it over, so it's stable and it's in its place, so that then you have that same rotation. So yeah, it's hard to say, but I believe I wouldn't have had that problem. It would have been fine.
You did get to appear in two games with the Washington Capitals. Again, something they never take away from you, stepping on the ice in the National League. What do you remember of that first NHL game?
Yeah, so the first game I was in Pittsburgh in the old igloo, and I was 18. Hadn't turned, yeah, I was just an 18-year-old, and it was exciting. I got called up to finish the season, so I was traveling with them. I got to do a few warm-ups. And yeah, it was just really exciting. I actually did pretty good. I had a pretty good game, I can remember, and the players were all really quite complimentary. And Bob, I'm not Bob, Mr. Murray, I was the coach's name, that passed away from cancer.
Terry Murray? Yeah.
Yeah, so, and then his son, his brother was on the team, actually. He had his brother Terry. He was a defense on the team. So when I played my game, he was in the lineup. So, and then yeah, so that was exciting. But then it was really exciting to get to Washington the second year I played against the Philadelphia Flyers, and we did win the game 3-2. And my defense partner was Rod Langway, which was really cool, and was in Maryland. So it was against Philadelphia, so it was a sold out crowd. Yeah, there was a lot of excitement. I was really happy. I wish I was disappointed that I couldn't get back there again, just the way things worked out with my shoulder injury and the way my career played out after that. But it was, yeah, I can never lose that moment. I was part of that team for, the organizations for those 2, 3 years, and it was exciting to get a chance to play.
You were able to put together a decent pro career in Europe, but before that, you decided to go the school route and ended up playing in your hometown with the Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks. What made you make the decision to go back to school?
Well, it was pretty easy because my dad was a university graduate and he was a professor at Wilfrid Laurier. My mom also, she was a career woman. She was a graduate from UBC. My mom and dad both grew up in British Columbia, and my dad got the job at Wilfrid Laurier, so that's what brought him to Ontario. And my mom went on to be the director of nutrition and food service at KW Hospital for 25 plus years. So, education was a foundation in the family, and I had the opportunity to come back to play at Laurier because my dad had that benefit of being able to have tuition for his kids. So, I lost my OA. We didn't really have much of an OHL package back then when we were playing. There was a little bit, but I'd lost it because I signed a professional contract. So, anyhow, I was devoted to getting my education, came back, and I was excited to play for the Laurier team. And those were really good years, really good memorable years playing hockey with Laurier, and then moving on after that and playing over in Europe. I mean, if I look back at it, like I said, I had that deficiency of my shoulder, so the rest of my playing career I had to play with that deficiency over my career, but I still was able to do really quite well with it.
Did you always know that's what you wanted to do, what you were going to finish school and you were going to try pro hockey somewhere?
I was motivated too. I was excited playing at Laurier, and I was a top player in the University of CIAU. And after graduating, I'd always, I mean, I had that exposure of going to Europe with the World Junior team and the World Junior Championships. So I was excited. I liked the idea of traveling, and I'm an avid traveler still. I've been around the world to a lot of different places, and I was motivated to go there, and I went, and I enjoyed the 9 years I was there. It was really exciting.
What
I
was
actually got back there this past year. I went back for a month in September. I hadn't done it. I went on a holiday for 5 weeks, and I went and visited pretty much all the teams I played for there, and watched some games. And I made a stop in Zurich where Mark Crawford was coaching, and he's still coaching there. They're in the playoffs right now. I stayed with him for about 3 or 4 days. I got on the ice and helped coach for a bit. It was an exciting 5 weeks getting back there and revisiting some of the places I played and visiting some old teammates.
That's amazing. I love that. And what was the hockey like over there compared to the CHL and then, of course, CIAU with Laurier?
Well, the hockey, yeah, it's very good. I mean, the hockey in Europe is very strong. When I played, I think the depth of it is the biggest difference. I think when you compare it to Canada in particular, they don't have as much popularity down through their population, but so that the number of players they have is limited, so that at the top end you've got your limited selection of quality good players, so that even within their professional leagues, typically the decline of the skill level as soon as you get past kind of the five, six teams declines a bit. Whereas I think there's here, there's you still have that, but if you look at it, there's more parity. And I mean, if you look at it even now, I think like Canada, like if you were to have 10 Canadian top teams and took all the top players in Canada, you'd probably, and you took the top 10 teams in Sweden or some of the other countries, those bottom teams really wouldn't be able to compete, I don't think, with our bottom five, six, seven teams. So it comes down to depth. We have a lot more depth. I mean, it's changing now. It's getting less and less as we move on. But back then, I think the discrepancy was much higher.
It seems like your experience in the junior leagues here kind of set you up for all of this travel from the Quebec League through the Ontario League over to Europe, France mostly, finished in Great Britain. But there's another big stop in there. And you mentioned, reconnecting with Mark Crawford, doing a little coaching there in Zurich while you were there, just helping out a bit. You also were in China helping to grow the game in time for the 2022 Olympics.
Yeah, I think I look back right now and COVID, that was the biggest, really big impact on an opportunity that I had. And I loved that opportunity. I went over there as a representative for Hockey Coach Vision, which is a software that's really practical for coaching hockey. And I actually use it with the coaches here in minor hockey, because I'm mentoring and coaching the younger kids, the 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 year olds. I get them out and doing skills, and I get the coaches all involved, and I use this app to share with them, to get them up to speed with what's happening on the ice, and to minimize lost time on the ice. But so that opportunity with going to China, it was with an organization that was linked to the Olympics, and it was incredible. I was up in Zhangjiakou, which is 3 hours kind of northwest of Beijing, and outdoors they had these two big Olympic size outdoor rinks that didn't have any really stands or nothing. It was just that they put up, and then they flooded, but the weather, it was perfect for outdoor rinks. The entire time I was there, for the 3 weeks I was there, it was pretty much clear, sunny sky, but like -5 to -15 every day. Couldn't ask for a better temperature for creating an outdoor rink. And so they brought in, and it was a whole program designed for the Olympics to educate some of their school kids, a pilot project where they brought in, over the 7 week period that they were running that thing, I think 24,000 school kids. So every day that I was there, busloads were coming in, like 1,000 kids a day. We had these portable classrooms set up, and we had skates that were ones that were clip-on ones or the strap ones, so that you could quickly put them on. They had varying sizes. They came in and got educated really quickly on what skating was. The interesting thing was they used the software that Hockey Coach Vision has, and I created a skating program with video support and showing them how to put skates on, showing them all the stuff, so that the Chinese coaches that I was leading, they had TVs inside the portables so that for the first 5 minutes, 10 minutes they were there while they were getting their skates, they were being instructed with the app and the ability to see kind of what was going on. It was really interesting. So, anyhow, just the sheer numbers of people that they put through in that program was incredible. And the whole intent was that there were working 3 years ahead of the Olympics because they wanted to use the Olympics to expose it to as many kids as they could to try and improve the number of people that were participating in winter sports. So COVID hit though, because I was scheduled to go back the next year. I was all set up to go back the next year. Hockey coach vision again, and we had two coaching seminars organized right in Beijing in the Olympic kind of, you know, where they had the igloo and they had that the track stadium that they were converting to an ice pad, I think, to do some of the oval skating. I can't remember all the setup that they ended up doing, but because it got squashed with COVID, and then they stopped having foreigners go in, so it was limited. But anyhow, that was disappointing because it was right. I was set to go in January. And in Wuhan, it happened in November or October, November. These COVID cases started happening. And then it came to Christmas and they shut everything down. They said, we can't have this clinic going on. They had to postpone it, hopefully. But then, as you saw how it unfolded, it never picked up. So lost that opportunity. And then from that, everything was just kind of on the decline. Everyone was worrying about COVID. You know, managing COVID. Yeah.
Hockey coach vision sounds pretty familiar. Isn't that your old teammate Larry Hewers's?
Yes,
Yeah,
Larry.
yeah, yeah.
Larry Kitchener Ranger. He's a big man on it. Him and I are really good friends. I was talking with him just 2 days ago because I'm still heavily linked with Hockey Coach Vision, and I really like the app. It's really practical for minor hockey organizations to use. See what it is, it's animated so that you have a 2D animation and you have a 3D animation, and then you can kind of link into players with the animation. You can follow what the player does. So for me, I've become really apt in drawing with it. And what I like about it is I can draw, like I use a lot of stations, you know. So for me, I can get a rink, I can draw all six, all five, all four, whatever number of stations I want. And it's animated, and I can hit a play button, and then it shows the pattern that every player is using and the equipment I'm using so that I can send it, and coaches can have it on their phone. So they have the app on their phone. I send it to them. They pull out their phone. They open the app. The drill's there. They open it up. It's one big rink. They hit the play button, and then they can see real quickly all the drills. I can also put in all the key teaching points and a little bit of an explanation on each drill. But with that and the visual of it, and you can do 2D and you can do 3D. So the 2D is just like little round circles and it shows their patterns. But then you can go 3D and it actually shows hockey players, animated hockey players doing the drill. It changes the perspective of it. It kind of gives you seeing them in both versions gives you a real helpful indication of what's happening in the drill, as opposed to like when you see on a regular app and you got the drawings and there's arrows and there's stuff. I mean, for me, it takes quite a bit of time to read and decipher what's going on with the drill. Whereas this, you open it up, you read the thing, you look at it, you see what they're doing, and it's really quite quick. So the process for coaches to use and minimize disruptions on ice time, or you know, just facilitates on ice management with practices.
What would have 1981 Memorial Cup champion Eric Calder have thought of something like this?
Well, yeah, I think it would have been really interesting. I mean, we didn't have any type of video or any type
Exactly.
of TV screen. We didn't have a cell phone, nothing back then. It was pretty simple. Like, in all honesty, the Memorial Cup, It was on beta, the original version I had of the video of the game was in beta. So definitely we've come a long way with technology, and we're going to continually see that. I mean, that's one of the biggest things we'll always experience. And if I can quote a good Bob Dylan song, the times are a changing. You know, it's always happening. I like to play guitar, and it's a song I like to play. So,
Nice. I like it. I like it. How many of those guys from that championship team do you keep in touch with?
quite a few because, and we're we the interesting thing about being a champion is you always remember being a champion together, and when it's at the level of winning a Memorial Cup and its prestige. So we have an email chain that we're on. So, a couple times a year, sometimes it's more often than a couple times a year, but we get on and there's always someone saying something or sharing something. So we've got an ongoing connection. And I mean, uniquely 40 years ago was in 81, so 3 years ago, and we had a Zoom call together. It was really good. We're due for another one. And it was really good having all of us on a Zoom call and talking about old things and seeing each other, keeping in touch. So, it's good. We're still in touch.
That's fantastic. And championship teams do tend to do that, right? Winning a championship together bonds you, I think, in a way that not many other things can.
Yeah. No, and it's ongoing. We've been talking about a reunion, like getting together. It kind of goes by every year. It seems that we're waiting and waiting, but it's going to happen. It's going to happen sometime soon. It's my guess. But I mean, it's really sad we lost Dale. I mean, he was a great,
Oh.
great player, great teammate, and he was a prominent player, obviously, with the championship team. So we were all sad about his passing.
No question about that. It's a loss for not just the hockey world, but he was a good man all around. It's a loss for, I think, everyone concerned for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Another one of those former teammates of yours, and one you mentioned earlier because you came all the way up through hockey with him since you were 7 years old, and it was the two of you that started Skills Plus Hockey together.
Yes, we did. Yeah, we both had the idea of kind of coming together and teaching after I got back from Europe. And Roy played in Europe too as well. He had some experience in Europe. And so he was a school teacher though. He went through university, completed his education, but he went on to get his Bachelor of Education. And so he pursued that a little bit before he went to Europe, and then he went to Europe for a couple 2 3 years, and then he came back and picked that up. But he got a little bit uninterested with it, and we started up Skills Plus Hockey, and that was good. But he was living up in Caen, and he had to commute every day. Our big focus was teaching after school programs. We did have hockey camps, but we had daily after school, and I was teaching in the morning time too, in the morning. So it was hard for him to make that commute and back. So we were together about 3 years, I think, and then he jumped out and I took over. But we're still really good friends, Roy and I. I was just talking to him actually yesterday. He lives up now near Lion's Head with his partner, and he's retired with her, but he loves golf. And yeah, we had a great childhood together. We played every year together, all the way up until we were 20. Amazingly enough, every time minor midget, we moved up to the major midget team. Siskins moved up, played for the Siskins, and then we got drafted, played 3 years together in Cornwall. And yeah, it was a special time. I don't know if you remember about Roy, but Roy had that really bad accident as a 16-year-old. He got in the game against Stratford in the playoffs. We lost in the we won the Cherry Cup. We beat Stratford in the finals there, in the finals of the Cherry Cup, but then we lost to Windsor in the Sutherland Cup. And but Roy got a skate across his throat and it cut his jugular, not his jugular, it cut his trach, so that all the blood went internally. And he was really fortunate. We were all really fortunate. But one of the players on our team, Dr. Coppolino, he was in the stands. And he and Rich Ennis, I'm sure you know who Rich Ennis is, they both identified quick. They were on the ice quick. Dr. Coppolino didn't wait for anything. He jumped on the ice and was there. And they performed a trach right there on the ice to save Roy's life. You know, used a pen. Can you believe it? He used a pen to do a trach, and then Roy recovered. And next thing you know, one of the greatest comeback stories in history, right there. He went on to win the Memorial Cup a year later after that accident. Had a good year in Cornwall and scored a goal in the Memorial Cup final.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. I didn't remember that story. It's parts of it are coming back now that you bring it up. And I definitely know Rich really well. He taught me a little bit at the University of Waterloo. And of course, now he's involved as the mental strength coach with the Kitchener Rangers. So I see a lot of them.
Yeah, sure. So Rich, he was involved in that situation and had Rich for 2 years, because I was called up as a 15-year-old to play for the Siskins about 10 games, I think. And he was the trainer at that time, and then he was the trainer as a 16-year-old. He liked following Roy and I. He came to Cornwall a couple times and was keen on following our career. He's a good man. I've known Rich for a long time.
Yeah, he really is. You know, you were quoting Bob Dylan a moment ago. I'm going to quote Larry Hurus, whose name we've talked about, because I was just talking to Larry recently, and he described himself, Eric, as a hockey lifer. And I got to think, you're pretty much in the same boat. Like, here you are with skills plus hockey, still doing your thing, but it's, you know, shoulder injury notwithstanding, might have shortened your pro career, but you're still involved in the game. Why? What keeps you attracted or attached to it?
Well, I guess just my upbringing, for sure, being involved with it, and then continuing each year, having opportunities that just laid from one opportunity to the next. And so I've gotten heavily involved in the skills. I like the skills part of it and the connection with Hockey Canada. You know, I went through, I am one of the most certified guys in Canada, really. I have my high performance too coaching certification for the coaching side, and then I have my certified skills coach. So those connections, you know, when you have that, can lead to a continued interest with it. And you know, and it's like, yeah, so one thing I am working on it that's really kept me keen on it is I own a property up near Goderich, and it's a 12 acre property that's backs onto a conservation area, and it's close to the rink. It's like 5 kilometers from Goderich Arena, and Goderich Arena keeps ice in the rink. But the one thing with my property, it's set back 1 kilometer from the highway, so it's not on the electrical grid, and I'm busy working on developing it. But I am running my first week of hockey camp there in August. I'm just going small. I'm running a full day camp with 24 kids. They're going to go on the ice, and then I'm going to have them bust back to the property. But the property is really unique. It has a really unique ecosystem. It has a spring pond with a stream that runs from the spring through into the pond, and then it backs on to 125-acre conservation area that's full bush. My property's full bush, and I've developed it into a lot of different places where they can do small ice games and small ice exercises. And it's just a real private, nice space to do team building, really team building. So that's kind of my focus now, in kind of more leading to retirement, as I'm hoping to develop it so that teams could come in and do team building there and get ice time at Goderich. I could lead an ice time, but maybe their coaches just lead an ice time and then they come back and do some team building exercises on site, and I can do some, other activities, like that. Just there's a lot of team building activities you can work, and there's off ice training you can do. I am a musician too, so I can kind of create and play some music for them a bit. There's a bunch of different activities I'm thinking of doing. They can have a nice meal together. It's all about the camaraderie and joining and getting to know each everyone. So these are some of the ideas I have, and I'm looking forward to expanding them in a little bit more of a retirement direction.
I am very fond of the shores of Lake Huron, Eric, and I want to know how I get invited to one of these team building exercises. I'll be there. Come on.
Yeah, for sure. No doubt. I'm confident that you'd enjoy it for sure. It's a beautiful place, and I'm looking forward to expanding that. I'll be sure to extend the invitation once I get something going.
Okay, you can count on me being there. How do you feel about where the game is at today? You've been so deeply involved in it for so long. You're so deeply involved on the skills side today, and everybody, it seems to be in agreement that the skill level, fitness level is so much greater today than it was 40 years ago. How do you feel about where we're at with the game?
Yeah, so definitely the emphasis on promoting skills and promoting conditioning is at a forefront, and it's really developed over the years, along with equipment. Equipment's really helped the progression of the game too, and the sticks and just the lightness of the equipment. Well, but if I was to look at it as being a professional skills coach, I'm really adamant about myself as a 60-year-old, my own fitness, and I really keep myself in good shape. And my main focus for conditioning really is flexibility. And if I was to look at the game and look at players, and if I was to look at Canada and my own experience, I don't think players maximize their range of motion. And I think there's deficiencies in their ability to attain their highest level of performance by not being flexible enough. And it starts flexibility, in my opinion. I really didn't really engage with it. I mean, I actually did stretch quite a bit as a pro player. I did a bit, but not to the extent I should have. And my range of motion wasn't at the level that it should have. But I started really working on it when I got to be about 45. But in looking at and training younger players, there isn't enough promotion of it to spend time as a team. And just there's more. I mean, definitely you got to have the emphasis on skills, developing skills. But as younger players, there tends to be this push of doing dry land training, like all these different companies that are trying to get them to do dry land training and building that into their workout, which is important. But in my opinion, I think it needs to be more at the younger ages. There needs to be a bigger emphasis on stretching, range of motion, flexibility, so that then when they get into their teens and into those prominent years of playing and the better players, they have that entrenched in them, that they got to work on their flexibility, because range of motion is so important for skating and shooting. You think about Bernard's shot, his ability to get his arms inside to be able to whip the shot and score. Same with Matthews, same thing. Clearly, they got good range of motion for that exercise. But skating as well, if you want to have power, you want to have power and strength and speed. Sure, you got to have the strength there, but you got to have the ability to have the range of motion. And if you don't have the range of motion, you're limiting yourself. So another thing, in talking with Hockey Canada, like I talk with Corey McNabb and some of the top guys that are involved with all the coaching certification and ongoing presentations. And the biggest thing with Canada and our arenas is we don't in our arenas, we don't have a space for like it's hard. Like time, kids are find it hard to fit everything in. They got school, they got their team commitments, they got their family commitments. Time is of an essence. So in order for us to produce and give kids the opportunity, I think we got to better design our arenas. And like Rim Park, they got a gymnasium. They got four gymnasiums there, but they're pretty much dedicated to basketball and other sports. It's hard to, and they're too big of a space. Modern day rink, in my mind, has to have a dedicated small room or two little small spaces where teams that are practicing can come in, do a 60-minute ice training, and then do a 20, 30-minute off-ice stretching agility training so that they're getting that right at the same time and they're getting it two, three times a week. And it fits into their schedules. And I really believe if we could adapt that and create that in our arenas, we would have better development for our younger players moving forward.
And
You know, like, yeah.
it's a great point. It's a great point. There's so much more involved in all of it than just what goes on the ice.
Yeah. And I mean, you get all these players now, these playing spring hockey. You know, they just gone through a whole hockey year of playing hockey. And then the next thing you know, they're trying to jump onto a spring team where they're just playing more games and practicing, where they could take that time and work on skills and work more on flexibility. And, you know, the cost of it traveling to other arenas to go and play more games, you know, and then they're, I mean, I think it's been proven that most of the top athletes that have prevailed have been multi-sport athletes. You know, I don't, you know, so that there is a benefit of playing other sports. And everything's gone so now that you got to streamline and get into a sport, and you can't really do another sport because if you it takes too much time and they want you to do it for the full year, for like example, soccer, even baseball now. You know, if you're at an elite baseball level, they want you to do all your training during the winter and stuff. It's hard to be a multi-sport athlete, which is a bit of a shame because I think players lose some of their abilities to be a better athlete by not being a multi-sport athlete. And the spring hockey just leads to not being a multi-sport athlete.
A lot of other things out there you can do. A lot of guys just used to play lacrosse. Baseball in the off season used to be a
Yeah.
big thing too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember my childhood was just devoted with lots of multi-sport. I played rep soccer and rep baseball. Roy Russell, he played rep soccer with me. And then a couple other players I had, we played baseball in the summer and I was swimming and doing all kinds of stuff. And but we didn't have any hockey training over the summer. You know, hockey season went, it stopped. You had a hockey school maybe like in August leading up to tryouts and doing it, but pretty much, you know, once April hit, end of April, you know, it was done for till September. Yeah.
Yeah, for
So.
sure. Eric, this has been great to get a chance to catch up with you, talk hockey, talk skills and coaching. Thanks so much for making time to do this with me.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot, Mike. I really, really enjoyed it. It was awesome.
Hi, I'm Emily Roger, and I host a leadership show called The Boiling Point with my co-host, Dave Vail. Together, we sit down with trailblazing entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and movement makers who are driving meaningful change in our world. The show is all about exploring the lives and perspectives of leaders who are making a difference. Join us for insightful conversations that challenge the status quo, spark new ideas, and inspire you to take action. Find us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or at boilingpointpodcast.com.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.